This is Heartache is a Lonely Road, written by Very Rach and read by Flower Parish. This is a Marvel and DC crossover fic, rated mature, featuring the relationship Phil Coulson / Jim Gordon. Tagged, 5+1, enemies to lovers. They are so done with each other, until they're not. Chapter 1. The Investigation. Yeah, that's a dead body, Jim confirms, looking at the deboned, deorganed pile of flesh on the sidewalk. Or it was, before someone or something sucked it dry. Oh my god, one of the uniformed officers mutters, looking green around the gills. Jim doesn't really blame them. He also wishes he'd opted for a different phrasing. Sorry, Jim concedes. Okay, Acosta, I want you to pull CCTV from every camera in a 10-block radius, and Martinez, you start asking around for witnesses. I know we're close to Crime Alley, but this looks like the kind of trouble that's bad news for everyone, so see if you can't find someone who saw something, okay? I'm going to stop you there, a voice says from somewhere behind Jim. It's not loud or quiet, not timid or imposing. It's the blandest voice Jim has ever heard. So bland, in fact, that its lack of distinctiveness is almost a distinguishing feature in its own right. Shields got it from here. When Jim turns around, he's greeted with the sight of a man who goes so perfectly with his voice that Jim can't help but stare at him like a particularly unintelligent goldfish, gawping at the glass walls of his tank in the futile hope that he will one day return to the sea. He's an average height, with medium brown hair cut short and styled neatly. He's clean-shaven, in a mid-range suit. His carefully curated blandness could not scream G-Man more loudly if he sewed a megaphone to the front. The agent introduces himself as Phil Coulson. Or, rather, he gives Jim a card with his name and number written in a boring font under Shield's logo. He turns away, clearly considers their interaction to be finished. When Jim taps him on the shoulder, he turns back with a look of such polite disinterest that Jim has to draw on every iota of self-restraint gleaned through his career, not to smack him in his smug, jurisdiction-stealing face. Gotham's not like other places, Jim tells him. He can see the second the words leave his mouth that they're not going to make the slightest bit of difference. Coulson humors him with a smile, kindly, with a good dose of patronizing. Sure. Everywhere is unique, after all. Gotham's more unique than most. I said I'll take it from here, Coulson says. And who's Jim to argue with a government agent? He shrugs and wanders away to stand down his officers. If Coulson wants to operate in Gotham, it's for the best that Jim lets him discover her quirks the hard way. Shield gives up long before Batman does, but luckily their local hero is more determined, or possibly just has more resources to throw at the problem, especially when the problem is an Arkham escapee going by the incredibly clunky name of Chupacabra, hell-bent on sucking his victims dry like human Capri Sun pouches. Jim shows up to take over custody of the wild-eyed super-sucker and snaps a picture of the villain on his phone, which he later texts to Coulson with a single thumbs-up emoji. Chapter 2. The National Police and Security Agency's Security Conference, Washington, D.C. So you can leave Gotham, you just choose not to, the voice says behind him. Soft, deceptively bland. Politeness used as a veneer to hide any number of layers of who knows what underneath. It's important to stay up to date with the latest security developments, Jim says, matching Coulson bland for bland. And this must be the right place to do that. Security is in the name twice, after all. He'll never be able to prove it, of course, but there was, without a shadow of a doubt, a flicker of something at the right corner of Coulson's mouth that could potentially have been the beginning of a smile if he hadn't bitten down on it like a dog with a postman's leg. "Very diligent of you," he says. And there it is again, that smug teasing, that G-man superiority that always shows up sooner or later. "Yeah, well, sneer all you want," Jim tells him, not bothering to curb the anger creeping into his voice. "But it's easy for you, swooping in and out whenever you want. Gotham means something to me, and more than that, I have to fucking live there." "You know, we do the same job, you and I," Coulson muses, tilting his head. Jim wonders if it's meant to be disarming. If so, it won't work on him. His arms are firmly engaged. "Thank you very much. It's just that my Gotham is the whole world, the whole galaxy even. Think of my comings and goings less as swooping in and out, and more like meandering from City Hall over to that donut place on Wilson." "Wait, you know Marvin's?" Jim asks, startled enough to temporarily lower his arms to half-mast, metaphorically speaking. "I had a stakeout near there a few months ago," Phil says. "Those bear claws, am I right?" "God, and here I thought you were on the verge of redeeming yourself," Jim scoffs. "All the way to Marvin's and you don't even choose the apple cruller." Phil opens his mouth, no doubt about to say something else asinine about donuts, but thankfully he's interrupted by a colleague who whisks him away to see some kind of ice laser cannon demo. A week later, a delivery guy drops off a box of 24 apple crullers from Marvin's. The note, taped to the top, just says, "The first step on my path to redemption," in what is frankly offensively neat penmanship. Jim can't quite keep the smile off his face as he bites into the first one. It's still warm. Chapter 3. Jim's Apartment. The knock comes late, too late to be bringing anything but trouble to Jim's door. He opens it cautiously, chain in place and service weapon in hand, held out of view behind the edge of the door, but ready to be put to use at a moment's notice. When he sees the person knocking so loudly, so late, he clicks the safety back on and reholsters his pistol with a long-suffering sigh. "Hey, Jim," Coulson says with a polite smile. "Don't suppose I could trouble you for a Band-Aid?" Even battered and bleeding, Coulson is annoyingly composed. Jim sits him down at his kitchen table with instructions not to get blood on the formica and goes to fetch his first aid kit. "Don't remember giving you my address," Jim says as he cleans the cut on Coulson's bicep. It's suspiciously straight, a single slash through the skin, width and depth unchanged along its length. Coulson has declined to discuss the wound or how it came into existence, but Jim knows what it looks like when a bullet is close enough to graze rather than puncture, doesn't need some alphabet agency jamuk to confirm or deny what he can see with his own eyes. "Ran a background check on you a while ago," Coulson says. It's more honesty than Jim expected. The surprise jolts his hand, and Coulson sucks in a sharp breath through clenched teeth. "Sorry," Jim says quickly. Coulson shrugs. "Still better than the alternative," he says, and somehow his half-smile doesn't seem as false, here, in Jim's kitchen with his shirt pushed down one shoulder, and tiredness dragging at the edges of his expression. It seems more like he's scraping together the very last of his energy to thank Jim, and that's... Jim shakes his head, forcing himself to refocus on the cut in front of him, on wiping it clean as gently as he can, concentrating on keeping his hands steady, so that he doesn't have any brain left over to wonder why this moment feels more loaded than any of the other times he's done this for someone else. "Background check," Jim asks, grateful for the chance to redirect the conversation. "Wanted to offer you a local liaison role," Coulson says. "Could be useful to us." "You mean you wanted a hotline to the bats," Jim says dryly. "You don't need to make up a pretend job for that. Just ask if I'll get in touch with them for you. If I think it's worth their time, I'll fire up the signal." "No," Coulson says, and it must be the pain he's in that makes him sound so intense. "No, don't do yourself down. We wanted your expertise. Like you said, Gotham's not like other places." "Didn't think you were listening," Jim says, and that's twice tonight Coulson has surprised him. Coulson shrugs, then winces, pulls at his wound. "Consider my lesson well and truly learned," he says, and Jim believes him. Chapter 4. Residential Apartment Building, Granton. "Is everyone out?" Jim asks, walking up to the tape surrounding the scene and flashing his badge at the patrol woman who's guarding the perimeter. Zhang, her badge reads. Jim doesn't know her, but she looks slightly bored, which speaks in her favor, given the building behind her is currently engulfed in a magical blaze. As he watches, tendrils of blue and green fire wrap around the facade, flickering ominously. As if there's any other way otherworldly blue flames could flicker. Zhang shakes her head. "No, some guy wouldn't leave. He said he knew her." "He knew..." "Oh." Jim sighs. "Middle-aged, looks polite, but boring." "Yeah," Zhang says, looking a little more interested now. "Really dull vibes, but brave. Or stupid. Maybe a little of both." "Maybe." Jim cranes his head back and looks up at the inferno. Or perhaps not an inferno, now he looks closely, as the fire doesn't seem to be damaging the building in any way. It's just enveloping it, licking at the brickwork without leaving any trace of smoke or burning. And now he's thinking about it, there's no heat coming off the building either. As Jim watches, a window on the third floor opens, and Coulson leans out. He's lost his suit jacket, and when he spots Jim and waves, Jim can't help but notice that his sleeves are rolled up to show off surprisingly toned forearms. "Gordon," Coulson calls. "Nice to see you. Any chance we could borrow you?" "We?" Jim asks. Coulson shrugs. "I'll introduce you when you get here." Coulson disappears again, the window slamming shut behind him seems pretty final, as last words go. "Could be a trap, sir," Zhang says. She seems unmoved by the thought. "If I'm not out in 15 minutes, call for backup. Bat backup. And tell them S.H.I.E.L.D. couldn't handle... whatever this turns out to be." "We" turns out to be Coulson and a statuesque blonde who introduces herself as Amora the Enchantress. Jim can hear the capital letters clicking into place as she speaks, her voice as imposing as her height, not to mention her shiny green tiara and the way she is also on fire. "I am a sorceress of Asgard, and you people have stolen something from me," she tells Jim imperiously, throwing her arms up dramatically. "I want it back." Jim eyes Coulson, trying not to be too obvious about it. He doesn't look worried, but Jim is starting to suspect that he might never look worried, despite any amount of internal turmoil. "Of course, if there's been a theft, I'd love to help reunite you with your property," Jim says slowly. "What's been taken?" Amora drops her arms, goblets of unnatural blue-green flame falling to the floor. Her demeanor changes slightly. At odds with her commanding presence, Jim gets the distinct impression she's embarrassed. "Ah, that's kind of a sore point," Coulson says, tossing Amora a conciliatory smile. Amora is suffering from a slight case of amnesia. Oh, I see. Jim frowns, looks at Amora again. "Well, I'm sorry to hear that, of course, but I'm not sure how I can help." The last thing she remembers is losing her, well, whatever it was, in a fight. A fight with a masked gentleman wearing a cape. "Ah. A black cape," Amora says, the ends of it all jagged as if it had been torn. And it was definitely a mask," Jim asks, though he suspects he has a good idea where this is going. "Or was it more like a cowl?" "It did have a sort of cowliness to it, yes, now you mention it." "I see, I see." Jim sighs, gives Coulson a weary nod. "I'll have a word, see what I can do." "You know the thief," Amora demands. At her words, the flames dripping off her limbs spark to life and crackle dangerously, twisting into a tornado of fire that starts to spin around the room. "Tell him that if he does not return my thing, I shall not hesitate to rain down fire the likes of which he has never seen before." "I'll be sure to mention it," Jim promises. "And he just gave it back," Coulson asks later, as they watch Enchantress zip off into the sky, her memory and amulet returned. A cup of coffee accompanies the question, the takeaway cup almost too hot to hold, even through its little cardboard jacket. Jim could kiss him. Jim shrugs, trying to shake off the image of kissing Coulson. He didn't seem to care either way if she had it or not, as long as she took it off planet. I might see if we can give Thor a heads up, Coulson says, though he doesn't seem to be in any kind of hurry to do so. He takes a sip of his own coffee, and if it's also hovering around the current surface temperature of the sun, he doesn't show it, doesn't even wince. Jim wonders what it would take to fluster his perfectly calm demeanor just once. Chapter 5. Outside the remains of the department store formerly known as Gelsey's. Call me crazy, but didn't this used to be a department store? Coulson asks. Jim considers the smoking crater in the heart of Coventry, or more accurately, the heart of what used to be Coventry. Yeah, Gelsey's. Real old-fashioned place. Classy, though. Marble floors, wooden counters, still had an attendant in the elevators. Huh. They don't make them like that anymore. Coulson kicks a chunk of asphalt, still lightly smoking. You think they'll build it back up the same way? Doubt it. There's no appetite for that kind of class anymore. They'll throw up a skyscraper here before the end of the year. Ugh, they will, won't they? Coulson wrinkles his face up in disgust, more emotion than Jim has ever seen him show before. People have no appreciation for quality these days. Jim is surprised at Coulson's attitude, but he can't quite put his finger on why. Perhaps it's simply that Coulson tends to keep any hints toward his true personality so tightly locked down that seeing him express a clear opinion on anything is jarring. Maybe not, Jim acquiesces, but I'll take a tacky skyscraper and zero civilian casualties over trying to save a building, even one as fancy as Gelsey's, even if it does mean a bunch of extra paperwork. You got forms for unexpected smoking craters? GCPD has forms for everything. Jim leans forward a little, peering into the crater. Huh, it's still really hot. I'm gonna grab a coffee, let it cool down before I start the paperwork, in case anything changes. Makes sense, no point in filling out all your magical, mystical crater forms twice. Exactly. Jim starts to turn away, pauses, turns back to Coulson, tilting his head to the side while he evaluates him. There's a pretty good diner a few blocks away. Nice pies, decent coffee. You wanna join me? Coulson is, Jim is annoyed to discover, an excellent coffee date. Well, no, not a date, obviously, not like that. Just a person to have coffee with. A coffee partner. A coffee buddy. Anyway, whatever he is, he's good at it. He tells Jim a selection of heavily edited war stories that get increasingly less plausible as they go on. Anyone else might have felt a little overwhelmed, Jim thinks. But luckily, he's got 4.5 decades as a Gothamite behind him, so he's more than capable of matching Coulson's story for story. Another, Coulson asks, when Jim's left holding an empty mug between his hands, the porcelain cold and unpleasant to the touch. I should get started on that paperwork, Jim says, and realizes with a jolt that the regret in his voice is a little deeper than the kind of faux apology that politeness demands. Right, of course, Coulson says. He stands up, fastens his suit jacket, and smooths out non-existent wrinkles with confident fingers. His every gesture is calm, professional, measured. Jim finds himself drawn to the sight, so entranced he nearly misses the slight sigh of what might just be disappointment. But if you're staying in town for a while, we could get dinner, Jim asks. I'd love to hear how it turned out with Goose. Oh, that is a good one, Coulson says. His eyes crinkle when he smiles, Jim notices. He wonders if he hasn't noticed before because he was distracted by more pressing matters or because Coulson hasn't smiled around him before. Pick me up at my apartment later, Jim tells him. You know where it is. Chapter 6. Baltimore Marriott Waterfront, Room 401. Coulson, Jim is delighted to discover, looks even better if you can get him flushed and panting a little. A few moments ago, Jim had reached out and hooked a finger in the knot of his perfectly fastened tie, tugging it loose and smiling to himself at how undone Coulson seemed from just that hint of dishevelment. Now, he tugs it the rest of the way, letting the smooth silk run through his fingers before discarding it on the floor next to his jacket. "You're sure this is okay?" Jim asks, as he unbuttons Coulson's shirt. It would be a shock if the answer is no. They're here, in a halfway point hotel carefully chosen for its bland neutrality, for this exact reason. But Jim wants to be sure they've moved on completely from all their earlier antipathy. He wants to hear it, wants to see Coulson say it so it becomes real. "Yeah, yeah, this is okay," Coulson tells him, fiddling with his belt buckle. Finally, it comes loose, and he lets his pants fall to the floor around his ankles. Jim thinks he's going to stop and fetch them, fold them, or hang them up in the built-in wardrobe, maybe produce a garment bag from somewhere, or a travel iron. But he just steps out of them, leaving them crumpled on the floor, and stands in front of Jim with his shirt tails half an inch shorter than his boxers, and it occurs to Jim that this is someone he'll fight to keep. "What do you like?" Jim asks, taking one of his wrists and carefully undoing the cufflinks there. "Tell me what you want, Coulson." "Phil now, surely," Phil says, and they almost laugh, their faces crinkling up in matching smiles and huffed breaths that don't quite go anywhere. "I want to suck you off." So, that's what they do. Jim sits on the edge of the pristine hotel bed and spreads his legs so Phil can sink to his knees between them, and it's as close to perfection as anything can be. That happened in Baltimore. It's been a while since Jim's been with someone new, so maybe his memory is a little foggy, a little unreliable, but he doesn't remember it being that easy before. He remembers awkward fumbling and stuttered, often unsuccessful attempts to guide a new partner to the parts of yourself where you needed them most. There's none of that with Phil, who is so easy to talk to, who offers his own desires up for Jim without shame or embarrassment. He takes Jim's hands and places them on his own skull before grabbing Jim's thighs. It feels good, holding on to one another like this. Jim strokes his thumbs over Phil's cheeks, guides him in this way and that with the gentlest touches he can manage. Probably not that gentle, he thinks. He's too out of practice. Divorced father of two adult children, he's been alone for longer than he cares to admit, and he never bothers trying to be gentle with himself. If Phil thinks it's too rough, too clumsy, he doesn't show it, and for once, Jim doesn't think it's because he's hiding anything. His mask is down right now. It's a privilege to see him like this, Jim realizes, an honor. He tells Phil as much, and grins when Phil squeezes his thighs by way of acknowledgement. "Not gonna last long," Jim tells him, because he reckons it's probably still polite to warn a guy. It's a little embarrassing, but there's not a lot he can do. Jim's been single for a while, and Phil's got a talented mouth. In any case, Phil just shrugs and doesn't slow down, which probably means he's fine with that. A promising sign, Jim thinks. He swallows Jim's spend eagerly and neatly, lapping at his cock until it's too sensitive, and Jim has to pull him away regretfully, curling over to kiss him instead. Phil's knee clicks loudly as he clambers to his feet, and he grimaces in pain. "God damn, I'm getting too old for that," he says wistfully, "but I enjoy it so much." "Come here, let me spoil you for a bit," Jim says, and tugs Phil down onto the bed with him. He's not optimistic enough about his refractory period to think he'll be ready to go again for a while now. It's not always a lot of fun getting older, but he thinks Phil might get it, and he can look after Phil in the meantime. Maybe, if he plays his cards right, they can look after each other for a while yet. The end.
Got a table for two.